I want to thank everybody for coming today. And most importantly, I want to thank members of the press for your patience with the family and the legal team. And we have taken a long time to sort through the various investigations, reports, findings, thoughts, and opinions. And we will admit it's taken us a while, but we wanted to be thorough before we presented our case to a jury in a court. It has been a very, how could I say, struggle for this family after suffering the inexplicable and tragic loss of their son, as we all know now, was gunned down in broad daylight in the middle of the street, and we know he didn't have a weapon, by Officer Darren Wilson. We are here today simply to present our case. We have seen the case being presented by the state. We've seen the case presented by the federal government. Obviously, we take dispute with the way those cases were presented. We have stated from the very beginning that presentation of evidence is key. The emphasis that's placed on certain evidence, the way it's highlighted, the inflections on certain aspects of it, is very critical to shaping any kind of conclusion or any kind of findings as a result of what happened on August 9th, 2014. The evidence has not changed, but the presentation of that evidence will. We expect to put on evidence that you've never heard about before, never seen. And to be quite frankly honest with you, to begin with, we don't have to go very far from Darren Wilson's statement himself. We have stated, and we're steadfast on the belief, that his initial statements to his supervisor describing what happened that day was sufficient to indict him. We know now that he's up to his fifth version, has been refined, has been perfected, and now he wants us to believe that he was a five-year-old sitting inside of a police car, trapped inside in the worst tactical position he could be in, sitting down, being attacked by someone like Hulk Hogan. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. But when you think about that story, you have to keep in mind that this five-year-old was somehow able to manage control and wrestle away his weapon from Hulk Hogan and get off a shot on top of that. And like five-year-olds would do in a situation like that, after Hulk Hogan starts to run, the five-year-old gets out the car and chases after him. And as we all know the story, supposedly this Hulk Hogan figure turned around, and now he's facing an officer who's standing upright on his own feet, who has a weapon in his hand, who's trained in defensive tactics, who is confronting an unarmed individual. I question at this point who he is referring to as Hulk Hogan and the five-year-old at this scenario. Because keep in mind, this large, ominous figure has been wounded badly. He's bleeding all over the street of Canfield. He's conceivably out of breath for running for his life, and he turns around and he's facing down the barrel of a gun. And out of Wilson's own mouth, take all the other witnesses out of the equation, Wilson's own testimony is that Mike Brown Jr. had his hands up as he was moving towards him. I encourage you to look at volume 5, page 72, line 16 of the grand jury testimony, where his sergeant testifies that he was told these things by Officer Darren Wilson. So the hands up, don't shoot anthem wasn't started by Dorian Johnson. It was started by Officer Darren Wilson, who described this scenario to his own sergeant, hot off the heels of gunning down Mike Brown Jr. on August the 9th, before he had any chance to reflect and come up with some other scenario. There's forensic and physical evidence in this case, ladies and gentlemen, that totally contradict what we have characterized as a concocted version of events from the very beginning. We are hopeful that our presentation of the evidence through this case will highlight the facts that nobody's seen, the physical evidence that nobody has talked about, that has been overlooked, placed in a footnote in some reports, and that at the conclusion of our case, we're hopeful that you will see that not only should he have been indicted from the very beginning, but he should definitely be held responsible for the killing of Mike Brown Jr. on August 9th, 2014. At this time, I'd like to turn the microphone over to Ben Crump, co-counsel for the family.
Thank you, Attorney Gray. We stand here with the parents of Michael Brown Jr., Michael Brown Sr., and Ms. Leslie McSpadden. Attorney Gray and Attorney Parks and I have tried to make sure that we remain consistent with what we asked of the public, and that is to look at the evidence, to vet the evidence for yourself. To this day, we still don't believe that the shooter of an unarmed 18-year-old teenager has never been cross-examined. And when you allow a person not to be cross-examined, they can get the story, the narrative, the way they want it. You know, we look at the Justice Department investigation, and as we look at it, we say, when did you do your own investigation? Why accept what the local officials are doing? What we wanted was to have a thorough independent review where the narrative of the police officer who killed Michael Brown Jr. was going to be challenged. And now we see all across America that the narratives of the law enforcement officers when they kill unarmed people of color is the same narrative. I felt in fear of my life. He was reaching for a weapon. I had to shoot. That was my only alternative. But we see in North Charleston, South Carolina, with Walter Scott, when you look at the standard narrative and we look at the evidence, the objective evidence on that video, the narrative is contradicted by the evidence. When we look at 12-year-old Tamir Rice in Cleveland, Ohio, and the standard police narrative, and we look at the surveillance video, once again, the police narrative is contradicted by the objective evidence. When we look at Eric Gardner in Staten Island, New York, the standard police narrative is contradicted by the objective evidence. When we look in Pasco, Washington, with Antonio Zambrano Montez, the standard police narrative is contradicted by the objective evidence. And the list goes on and on and on. Floyd Dent in Detroit, Michigan, they had indicted him. But when you look at the objective evidence on the video, it contradicts these narratives that these police officers use to justify the killing of unarmed people of color. So the question really is, when is America going to challenge the standard police narrative when they kill unarmed people of color? America cannot continue to sanction the killings of unarmed people of color. And that's what is happening over and over again when nobody is held accountable for the killing of these unarmed individuals. And so we stand here based on the forensic evidence. It's not Michael Brown's parents filing this lawsuit. It is the forensic evidence that is filing this lawsuit. And we challenge you to look at the evidence, look at the narrative that was put forth by the shooter, and you will see that that objective evidence contradicts the standard police narrative once again. And so as we go forward, we look forward to being able to cross-examine finally these versions, these narratives, because for whatever reason, I still cannot understand how the killer of an unarmed teenager is never cross-examined, never asked any tough questions by the people who do that in our community every day on far lesser situations, as we saw with the reports about how the citizens of Ferguson were being policed. At this time, we would entertain some questions, and we will try as best we can to get through this. This is obviously emotional, very emotional still for Michael Brown's parents. Attorney Gray. We can't predict.
Well, we don't necessarily want to comment about that right now. I can say that some efforts have been made to try to have a conversation. And that's as far as I want to take that part of it. We don't necessarily know what road or trajectory this is going to take, other than what the court places on the docket for us to do in terms of our pleading deadlines.
And we know there are different city council members that are now on the Ferguson City Council. And so all those things fact in. Mm-hmm.
I know your evidence doesn't have to be as strong as a criminal procedure. So your bottom line out of this whole thing, I heard the 5-year-old argument, I heard the cross-examination, but your bottom line that you think will convince the people that these family members deserve some economic results, your bottom line is what?
The bottom line is simply this, and I'll certainly let Attorney Gray answer this question as well, that Officer Darren Wilson did not have to use this deadly force on that Saturday afternoon in the Camp Field community. We do not believe, based on the forensic evidence and the narrative given, that Michael Brown should have been killed.
Yeah, in a civil case, what you look for is monetary damage. We have no authority now to place Darren Wilson in jail. So this is not a criminal case. He will not face any penalty in terms of imprisonment. That should have occurred at the state or the federal level. In civil cases, all we can seek is monetary reward in order to meet the justice that we thought that he should have received in the other two forms. I will say this too, that the amount we will leave up to a jury after they hear all the evidence. We don't have a fixed amount in mind at this point. We'll leave that up to the jury.
Do you have any other evidence or any other witnesses that haven't been
investigated? Yes, sir. About where the bullets.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this to you. People have not been important to us as we go through our investigation. The main person we focused on was Darren Wilson. We studied his narrative. He was the one that made the decision to pump bullet after bullet after bullet into Mike Brown Jr.'s body. It's his decision and his narrative for why he made that decision that we looked at. Take everybody else out of the equation, especially someone who has no police training, no police experience or police education, pontificating about what they would do if they was in Darren Wilson's shoes on that day. How a person like that found themselves mentioned in a federal and state investigation is mind-blowing to me. The only statement that we're looking at, and you know, there are other witnesses, and we encourage you, if there's somebody that has some physical evidence, at this point, it's not about the words. We're looking for somebody that may have video, that may have audio that would assist us. We've heard all of the different versions, and right now, the most compelling to us has been Darren Wilson, who was a 5-year-old on August 9th, 2014, his statement.
And it is very clear that is the crux of our case. The physical evidence, the objective evidence, versus the narrative that the shooter of Michael Brown Jr. has said what took place. Remember, and as Attorney Gray said, it was the shooter of Michael Brown who said he had his hands up. And so it's mind-boggling to us how everybody's saying these individuals who came out and exercising their First Amendment rights and protests over the government conduct in this case are trying to say they are discredited because we can say this person wasn't there or that person wasn't there. It was Officer Darren Wilson who said Michael Brown had his hands up.
Wait a minute, hold on for a second, say that again?
Chief Jackson also defended.
Yeah, and well, he's a defendant along with the city of Ferguson because in our opinion, they cultivated the mindset. They fostered the environment that made the gunning down of Mike Brown Jr. effortless for Officer Darren Wilson. He did it without compunction. He got on nationwide TV, said, I have no regrets, I would do it again. And it's from that atmosphere that was fostered and cultivated by Chief Jackson and the city of Ferguson as a whole through their historical treatment of the citizens of Ferguson that we feel gave him that sense of boldness and could get on nationwide TV with such arrogance and concocted version of events and tell the world that Mike Brown Jr. somehow now, instead of having his hands up, had one hand, the one that had all the blood on it, by the way, the one that was injured, he had that hand in his waistband. Now, I challenge you to find the physical evidence that supports that. Where's the forensic evidence that will back that concocted version of events up? That's what we looked at. Everybody wants to put on the physical evidence. We have bullets that are laying right next to the body of Mike Brown Jr. A bullet. How did it get there? How did he get on the ground if that doesn't support the notion that he was shooting in that direction? We have bullets that wasn't even retrieved from buildings that support the narrative that Darren Wilson was shooting at Mike Brown as he was fleeing. You didn't hear about that. You heard no examination about the shell cases that's consistent with him shooting outside of the vehicle. No mention of it. You heard about him bum rushing. Rushing at Officer Wilson to tackle him or to do something. There was no hand-to-hand. Let's make sure we dispel this notion. Mm-hmm. There was no physical struggle over the weapon at the time Mike Brown Jr. was shot and killed six times. He was shot six times on his own testimony. I base that on Wilson's own testimony. There was no struggle. He doesn't say that there was a struggle. He says that Mike Brown came toward him with his hand in his waistband. See, he has to tell you that because he has to create an objective belief in anybody that will hear this story that Mike Brown Jr. was going for a weapon. He knows if you hear that, which is the nationwide narrative for all officers, he was going for a weapon, that then if he used deadly force, you would accept that. I would accept it. Anybody would accept that. Makes sense. You put your hand in your waistband, I got a gun on you. I think any of us here are not going to wait until you pull your hand out to see whether or not you actually have a gun. We all understand that. But it's a lie. It never happened because the physical evidence don't back that up. There's no witness of all the witnesses out there that ever said that happened. Not a one. He's the only one that makes that statement. And he don't say it when his sergeant goes, hey, what happened? Don't you think that would be the first thing an officer would say? Sarge, I had to shoot and kill him. He was going for a weapon. Look at what his sergeant says he told him. Hot off the heels, not moments later, not after he had coffee, thought about it, talked to his lawyers, talked to his commander, got his story straight. Right when he says, what happened? He doesn't say, he went for a weapon and I had to shoot him. He doesn't say that. So that's why we have this case. And by the way, for technical reasons, I promised that I would do this. The case number on this is 15SL-CC01367. That's 15SL-CC01367. The case is assigned to Judge Gloria Reno, Division 19. I was asked to provide that information. I want. So the case has been officially filed, and we are moving forward. And of course, what we just said.
It is very important to know that we believe that a culture existed that forecast that something like this would happen in Ferguson, Missouri. And when you think about that Justice Department that revealed this cesspool of racism, how you try to distinguish that overwhelming, you know, assortment of evidence from what happened on that Saturday afternoon to Mike Brown. How are individual officers not supposed to be affected by the things we saw in those emails, by the culture that existed with how they were serving the public and the citizens in Ferguson with all these citations to raise revenue, and the manner in which they interacted with the citizens, you know, how they talked to them, how they, as we said many times before, policed them while they protected and served other communities. Remember what the witnesses said were the first words to Michael Brown and Dorian on that day. It was very, very graphic based on what the witnesses said, the officer said to them. It wasn't something they would say to citizens walking down the street in Clayton.
Exactly.
I'll go first. You know what? Like we've asked everybody, look at the evidence. We want you to base it on evidence. We were hopeful that somebody would cross-examine the killer of an 18-year-old unarmed teenager. We still haven't seen that. Has anybody seen a cross-examination? Has anybody seen any tough questions to the shooter of an unarmed 18-year-old in broad daylight who he says has his hands up? And that's what's troubling to us and many people all around the country. And we see these narratives just being accepted, not just by the locals, but by the federal government as well. And that's why I said we have to stop the sanctioning of the killing of unarmed people of color in America, because that's what we're doing when nobody is never held accountable. Well, you know, there's a grand jury that's suing the prosecutor because they don't think the process was fair. So the whole grand jury issue is a whole separate issue. We have many people who have looked at how this grand jury proceeding went. It's very troubling to us. We don't think it was ever a situation where they were looking to hold accountable the killer of Michael Brown Jr., but that's a different story.
And Rocky, let me say this to you about the grand jury process. Grand jury members don't have the training. They don't have the experience to ask the tough questions. That's why presentation, we've been saying from the beginning, presentation is clear and it's very key and it's critical. The evidence needed to be presented to a grand jury so that they really didn't have any questions. Because how could a layperson know what to scrutinize in terms of a police officer's behavior, but someone who's trained in the law, who understands the excessive force, who understands the nuances of that. So that's the reason why that process didn't necessarily pan out. And I've been clear about that, and I remain steadfast. If they want an indictment, they'll present the evidence in a fashion that will secure the indictment. They had the evidence there, and they obviously didn't present it in that way, so they failed. Well, let's make sure we're clear about that. They failed to obtain the indictment, okay? That was readily available for them. And to the question about the federal investigation and what they emphasized, and I'll say this, and I'm pretty much done. If you look at their investigation, two things struck me as really odd. They studied the pattern of speech of Mike Brown Jr. I thought that was really peculiar because they didn't do the same for Officer Darren Wilson, who used expletives in talking to two young men walking down the street, which he denies. He says he never used that. But you know, we get there because we study his pattern of speech. He admits in grand jury testimony of using the same string of profanity when asking Mike Brown to get away from the car. So he sounds the exact same way he would have sounded in the beginning. But let me tell you why he has to deny that. He has to deny that he told them to get the street out in that way, because he knows that sets the tone, that sets the tenor, that becomes a verbal sense of aggression, and he doesn't want you to know he came off that way. When he walks up to somebody and tell them to get the F out the street, you know that that touches, if I walked up and said that to you, your reaction would be different. So in order for me to look innocent, and for me to look like I'm just doing my job, I could never admit to that. But your pattern of speech exposes you. Your pattern of speech tells you out. And as far as the legal finding of the Justice Department, because we've studied this, yeah. If you look at the case that they're saying is the case that is almost identical of this case, the Mike Brown Jr. case, you look at that case, they used a guy who an officer told him to freeze and to not move, and the guy came forward anyway, and the officer shot and he killed him. And then the Court of Appeals of the Eighth Circuit said, you know what, that's justified. They had that in italics. They made sure they made a big point of it. And if you read their investigation in totality, it comes down to this case. This is the same thing. So a Court of Appeals will overturn, but what they don't say to you, and what you have to dig in and find for yourself, is that the person that was approaching this officer was armed with a weapon. He had a gun on him that he discarded, but the officer didn't see it. What does that mean? So when this guy's coming towards him, the officer still think he's armed with a weapon. How is that the same as Mike Brown Jr.?
What happens next? Where do you go from here now?
Where we go from here now is in the system. And we are now subject to the docketing scheduling of a court. They will then begin to make notifications to us as to when certain deadlines have to be met. We will meet those deadlines, and eventually, at the end of the day, we hope to be in front of a fair and objective tribunal who will hear our presentation of this case. And we're confident at the conclusion of that, Darren Wilson will be held responsible for the gunning down of Mike Brown Jr. on August 9th.
Thank you. What was the question? I'm sorry.
How are you going to get beyond the challenges of publicity in the case? Would a venue change be necessary? Would there be problems with witness testimony consistency?
I think everybody in America knows about Michael Brown being killed in Ferguson, Missouri. We would hope that we could get, as Attorney Gray said, fair-minded, objective jurors to listen to the evidence fairly with an open mind and be able to base their verdict on the evidence, not on, you know, the innuendo or the rumor or anything like that, but on the objective physical evidence. And that's important, because we think if you look at the objective physical evidence, it contradicts the narrative that is being put forth by the police department. And I think now in America, people are coming to see that we have to challenge the narrative, what I call the standard police narrative. In all these cases of killing unarmed people of color. And so we pray that this will be a fair process to everybody, because this is America and we want everybody to get their due process. Michael Brown Jr.'s family, as well as the police officer. And we think if everybody gets their due process, as Attorney Gray said, the police officer will be held accountable for killing an unarmed teenager in broad daylight who he said had his hands up.